Hello and welcome to the Reinvent Health Podcast. I'm your host, Nikki Robertson, and today I'm speaking with Bruno Oliehoek about his new book, Holistic Impact, The Ubuntu Polder Journey, a compelling exploration of how businesses can integrate the African philosophy of Ubuntu with Western business practices. Bruno is a seasoned business leader and visionary entrepreneur dedicated to catalyzing positive change in the corporate landscape. With over 28 years of diverse international experience across continents, Bruno has honed a unique perspective on holistic business transformation. I am because we are is a key theme in African philosophy that emphasizes the importance of the community over the individual. In his book, Bruno proposes a framework for businesses to operate with a sense of purpose and social responsibility. He encourages leaders to consider creating positive impact while maximizing profits. By embracing values like empathy, fairness, and collaboration, businesses can build stronger relationships with stakeholders and contribute to a more sustainable future. Holistic Impact delves into various aspects of conscious business, including leadership, innovation, and social impact. This book provides practical insights and real-world examples to illustrate how businesses can implement Ubuntu principles. Ultimately, Holistic Impact is a call to action for businesses of any size to become forces for good in the world. Hi, Bruno, and welcome to the Reinvent Health Podcast.
Thank you, Nikki. Glad to be here. So I'm Bruno Oliehoek, happily married. My wife is from Indonesia. We've been together traveling all over the world. We have three children. The first one was born in Singapore. Our daughter was born in Thailand. And the last one, the boy, was born in the Philippines. I consider myself a lover of life and very privileged to have been able to live and work in 12 different countries now. And I enjoy learning about new cultures, new foods, perspectives on the world. And luckily, my family does too. So we go together wherever we live. In my pastime, I love reading, photography, and for sporting, I love golf.
Okay. So let's jump into the book. And you wrote this book. How long ago was it? It's just come out.
It just came out something like less than two months ago. It's been the work of quite a number of years of thinking, and then even when I decided to start to write it, took me again about 2 years to finish it.
Yeah, that's a pretty normal timeline for a book. So the concept of Ubuntu is central to your book. Can you explain how this African philosophy informs the way business should operate, especially in today's economy?
Yes, thank you. So indeed, so the book is called Holistic Impact, The Ubuntu Polder Journey. And in it, I want to demonstrate how business can realistically create positive holistic impact by applying what I call the Ubuntu Polder framework. So Ubuntu indeed being central to this, a concept I learned about during my time in Africa, but it's mm-hmm. also a concept I felt in Asia, and basically in the developing world. And it emphasizes the interconnectedness of all people. So if you put that in a business context, it shifts mm-hmm. the focus from a purely profit-driven goals for just the organization to creating really value for all the stakeholders, be it the employees, but also the communities and the environment. And let me add right here, right away, that it doesn't mean that if more parties stay into gain, that it must mean that the organization will gain less. Rather, this philosophy reminds us that the success isn't achieved in isolation. And in today's globalized economy, where challenges like climate change and inequalities transcend borders, business must also adopt this mindset of collaboration, of shared purpose, and mutual benefit to strive sustainably. So businesses must go back to basics. It's about getting rewarded by solving societal issues. And since our issues are big, the rewards can be big too. And just a little anecdote, if you allow me, Nikki, is I remember in 2019, I was fortunate to attend the WEF in Cape Town, the WEF Africa. and we had a discussion on malaria and how can we eradicate malaria. And in the conclusion, it was basically said that mosquitoes don't have passports, and therefore we have to work together across countries. And so this concept applies to many of our issues because carbon emissions also don't have passports. So Ubuntu is really critical that we're aware of the world outside of just the goals of the organization. And on the cover of the book, the circle that you see with the people is basically to symbolize Ubuntu.
So just to deviate from sort of a normal line of questioning, I'm just curious because you have been, I mean, you were in working for big multinationals since you were in your late teens, early 20s. Was this a theme for you throughout? Is this, you know, was this something as a part of your consciousness right through your working career, or was it something that evolved over time?
That's a great question, and it's the question I asked myself after I won in 2021 the Conscious Companies Award, where a lot of paperwork, a lot of interviews, and a very, very senior jury. So I was thinking, out of all the leaders, why did they really, award this prize to me? And I really reflected deeply about my past. And yes, I do realize that I have been in my whole life intrinsically motivated
Yeah.
to do good and to be conscious, even though I didn't have the words for it back then. And it's actually this reflection after winning the prize that finally made me write this book.
I can imagine it must be something that is intrinsically part of you. So we met over COVID. We were involved in an organization, and I'm just wondering as well how that crisis, because it brings people together, crisis can either divide or it can bring people together. What was your experience of that very challenging time? And I know, you know, your organization had a massively, horrifically challenging experience. How did that also craft or inform what became this book later on?
Well, I think that COVID was really for the world a point to realize very in very concrete terms that our global problems have real impacts at the individual level. And so it was for me a little bit of a pause. We could see the interconnectedness of everything during the time of COVID. So yes, it was a crisis globally as well as for individual companies, and therefore it requires crisis management. And the key in crisis management is really communication, open, transparent, tell people what's going on, and then bring them together. So it's a very intense period where people are forced to work together. Which we did, but then by being conscious of, we're in it together with the rest of the world. Therefore, we cannot only selfishly think about ourselves and what we are having to do to survive, but let's also think about the nurses that still go out there help people, the other people that have to still go out and risk their life at the front line for the others, and what can we do to support them, to back them up. And so that is really how we approached it. And I'm very proud of the team because we were one of the few companies in South Africa and in East and Southern Africa in general, where all throughout COVID, we didn't have to stop, not even for one day. We managed by working together to keep going and continue to be a force for good.
So your book includes polder, which refers to a unique Dutch land reclamation process. How does this concept relate to the idea of conscious business? And why is it such an important metaphor for you?
So it's important to me because it's very personal. So I grew up in Holland in a polder, and so where my parents still live there. So that's our house is 10 meters below sea level. So you can imagine that if the dikes break, our house is kind of flooded. But these polders in Holland are centuries old, and therefore. People have been used to working together to protect the dikes from breaking for centuries. And so this polder system for me is a perfect metaphor for collaboration, consensus building, but also the intelligent use of technology. So it reflects the idea that when we're faced with a shared challenge, everyone must work together to achieve a creative solution. And that is precisely how I envision also conscious business, bringing diverse stakeholders together to address societal needs that create shared value. So we're working in and we're working as an ecosystem, just like a polder is a small ecosystem. And the polder symbolizes resilience and ingenuity that are also essential traits for any business, really, as they're navigating the complexities of our rapidly changing world. As I mentioned, technology is an important part of that. So there, obviously, in the polders, the most obvious example is the windmill, because the windmill back in the 13th century, it was used to just grind the grains. But then the Dutch transformed it to leverage this wind energy to move water up several meters. So it went from the polder and was drained out to the canals that were higher up that would then lead the water to the sea.
Right.
And again, last little comment, we only have one world that faces our global threats, and therefore our world is our polder. So the metaphor also works at that level. And on the book cover, you can see the windmill inside of the circle. So that is the polder part of the Ubuntu polder framework.
Yeah, but it makes complete sense that, you know, if we're working towards a common goal and we are including everybody and uplifting everyone around us, you can't help but succeed. I mean, that feels, maybe just to me and you, but I would think for most people that would make logical sense. But it doesn't always work in practice until you approach somebody with an idea. So what is the journey to, in your opinion, the journey to conscious business, or the first step that a company would have to take to transition from a traditional top-down, profit-driven, cutthroat, you know, way of doing business to a more conscious, purpose-driven approach? What would it take to change?
Well, first of all, I when you say it makes so much sense, I fully agree. And I'd like to remind people again also of where does the word company, you know, an organization come from. It's actually, it's something, again, invented by the Dutch in Amsterdam, when the rich families had to pool their money together to finance these expensive expeditions to the Spice Islands. And they all got shares in a company. And obviously, when the profits came, they would divide the profits up according to the shares. And then from there, the stock exchange was also invented in Holland. But the government was then appointed to issue the company licenses. And these licenses would only be given after a company was able to demonstrate how its products or its services would benefit society. And therefore, companies were intended to be conscious businesses from the start. So in a way, it is really about going back to basics. And then now that allows me to answer your question also. For me, the first step is to have this clarity on purpose. And companies should ask themselves, what is the societal or environmental problem that we're solving, and why does it matter? So purpose then becomes the North Star, guiding decisions, uniting the employees, and also aligning externally all the stakeholders. And without this foundational clarity, efforts shift towards practices that risk being fragmented or insincere, and then it becomes all about let's just make money as much as possible. And it becomes inward looking, so as opposed to outward conscious. So in the book, I make the point is we need to move from all for one to one for all.
Yeah.
And so that is what I believe is important, that the company aligns itself with the ecosystem.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, we can understand a startup, you know, it would be pretty easy for a startup to start with a good, like, outline the value system and to consciously build this kind of way of operating from the get-go. But we worldwide have massive organizations that have been around for decades, if not hundreds of years. What do you think it takes for a really big business to start asking these questions? Does it take crisis? Does it take near bankruptcy? What does it take for a big organization to start asking different questions? What's the incentive?
Yeah, I think that when we say big organizations and therefore we cannot do anything at an individual level. And this is also this feeling of being overwhelmed that people find themselves in often in when they're watching the news. The global problems are so big. Who am I? What can I do? And then you get this feeling of hopelessness. And I'd like to change this. And I'd like to make the point that it all starts at the individual level. And therefore inspired individuals who then work, fight, persevere for their ideas. So also myself, when I reflect on my journey, I see while I was working for one of the biggest companies in the world, way before I became CEO, I also made many initiatives that were having a positive holistic impact. Yeah. And the point is that we also know that positive achievement and success is contagious. Therefore, individuals can really move the needle when they are having their initiative bearing their initial fruits, and it will then naturally impact the wider organization. So that is definitely, I hope, reassuring that everybody can start, regardless of being in a small company or a big company. Mm. And I also feel these values can and should be applied universally. Mm. So frameworks like the Ubuntu Polder framework make the case as to why it makes sense to integrate values like cooperation, sustainability in the operations, in the governance, in the metrics.
Yeah.
So yes, leaders need to champion these principles and embed them in the company culture and systems. But additionally, by involving employees in co-creating, this shift helps overcome resistance and drive this meaningful transformation.
Mm-hmm. And you know, there's leaders and there's leaders who shouldn't be leaders. So what are the skills that you think would be most essential? What would you look for in someone who you would say, this is a leader who can take this company into conscious awareness? Because this is rare, as far in my experience, and my experience is not your experience. I work with companies in healthcare often, and I don't know. Hey, what do you think? What would you look for in a leader who you know could lead a company into a new framework?
Yeah, and when I describe the leader, it's obviously the conscious leader that's deeply empathetic, who's inclusive and also adaptive. So leaders will need to be able to excel in collaboration, in system thinking, and cultural humility. So they must also be courageous in challenging the traditional norms, the status quo, and advocating for a more long-term value in terms of just the short-term gains. So importantly, they should lead with purpose, be authentic, inspiring others through their commitment, and as a result, make a positive impact.
Mm, and I guess this is personality type as well. And that's quite, if you're starting with the top and you're starting, you know, with the leader, it's personality. It's maybe 50% luck and 50% induction to get this right. Otherwise, we'd all be doing it. So how does the idea of interdependence in Ubuntu challenge the traditional notion of competition in the business world? I mean, business is cutthroat. What role does collaboration play in the success of conscious business?
Yeah, so this, a lot of the ideas is about reframing, right? Having a new perspective. So Ubuntu reframes competition as a secondary priority to collective success. And in practice, this means that companies should embrace partnerships, should work in an ecosystem, recognizing that solving the global challenges required the pooled resources and expertise. As I said, you want to fight malaria, the mosquitoes don't have passports, so you need to think holistically. And collaboration can open new markets, mm-hmm. Share risks as you work together, and also foster innovation in internally. So the concept of it's like competition, where competitors collaborate for mutual benefit, And it's an emerging trend that embodies this philosophy. So I don't see myself as the only one having the answers. It's more that I'm sharing my version of how I've made sense of different things in the world, and hope that more people, that it helps more people to come on board, crystallize their ideas, and also get started.
Mm-hmm.
So also to remind everyone, the real competition is how you satisfy your consumer or your customer better than the others. And therefore, you can collaborate with others. So in the book, I mentioned one specific example from when I was working in the Philippines, and we worked on sustainable coffee practices. And to do that, we got everyone in the industry together to work on increasing the efficiencies. It allowed us then to produce more locally and reduce importations, which is good for the farmers locally.
Yeah.
But all the while, the brands, the organizations that were competitors were in this, working on it together as well. So several of the partners continued to compete in the stores. So it's not one or the other.
So in your book, you talk about the importance of integrating local and global perspectives. Now, a small South African company probably seldom has a global perspective, but you know, as we're becoming more, our borders are blurred. I mean, there are physical borders, obviously, but our communication, our interaction with the world at large is becoming, unlike at any other time in human history, we all actually get a sense of that we're all one. So how can businesses start thinking, especially I'm talking like smaller local businesses, how can they start embracing that that global vision to grow their businesses?
So the key is alignment between the local relevance that you need to be successful in your market and global ambition. Mm-hmm. So the businesses should design really solutions that address the local needs while ensuring scalability to tackle also global challenges. Mm-hmm. And so it involves co-creating solutions with communities, respecting the cultural context, leveraging the insights. But when you do it right, you've got this symbiotic relationship with strong local roots and also enabling meaningful global impacts. And so one example, again, from the book is a project or an initiative we called REAL, Realizing Enabled and Empowered African Livelihoods.
Yeah.
This was in KwaZulu-Natal, so rural South Africa, with the Makoba tribe. We had also Inyosi as a partner and Nestle. And so the common interest was very small, was a local dairy farm. But the partners worked to increase the output of this farm, but also moving to net zero, because dairy is often accused of being very bad for the environment. But we said, you know, let us work on making it a net zero operation. And to do that, we worked on different solutions that brought back biodiversity. We recuperated the methane from the cow dung. And we also looked at our environment and we said, okay, you've got this black wattle tree, which is an alien species in South Africa. And the farmers hate it because it takes huge amounts of water. So they used to just slash and burn. And we said, okay, let's try and see if we can use it more intelligently. And we did some research and we were able to integrate it into the cow feed. And then we had actually an additional advantage is that like Moringa, this black wattle was helping the digestion of the cows and reducing their methane release. So this allowed us to move towards a net zero dairy operation. And that is a very local model, but it can be scaled across Africa, across Asia. It's a real win-win. So both local as well as global.
Do you envision, and this is just, you know, listening to this, and this is an incredible learning. So what you've discovered just with a small example could have impacts globally. Other organizations and farms and manufacturers worldwide could learn or start innovating and thinking from this kind of example. I mean, do you envision one day having a global conference where companies come together and discuss these principles of how they've cooperatively solved problems so that other organizations in the world could do the same?
Yeah, and it's happening already. You've got the whole circularity that has, as a concept, that has now summits. I started following them a few years ago when it was relatively small, but they've become bigger and bigger. I also happen to be part of an organization called YPO, which is CEOs around the world. And within YPO, there is a so-called impact network. And they organize once a year a global impact summit. So getting different companies together, and they share what they're doing. And again, this was just started a few years ago with on a small scale. This year it was in Rwanda, was already much bigger. Next year in Vietnam, even bigger. So more and more people are getting on board. But yet they're always hungry for examples. So this is one of the reasons, again, that pushed me to write my book. It's not that it's unique per se on its own, but it helps to contribute and show others what are some of the steps that can be done at different levels. And therefore, I talk about examples upstream, midstream, downstream, across Asia, Africa, different parts, different sized companies, so that it helps people to say, okay, small steps do matter.
Yes.
And let's just get started.
Yeah. So for people listening and for readers who are inspired by your book and understand this is the way business has to go, what are the most practical first small steps that they should take to begin that journey towards creating a more socially responsible, sustainable enterprise?
So my first step is always introspection and reflection and dialogue. So start by refining your purpose, identifying areas where you see that your business can have the greatest impact. And then you engage your fellow workers, the employees, the stakeholders, and you look at the ecosystem you belong to. And then you try to align this vision and find win-win-win situations from the start. So it's not you see what you want to do and you impose it on the others, but you take the extra time to see, okay, so what's in it for me? What's in it for the others? And when you see this common platform that everybody has a win, then it's sustainable because everyone wants to get it to become a success. So then you can set measurable goals. You can commit to transparency and accountability. And then these small, consistent changes will create the ripple effects that lead to larger transformations. And it's like momentum. It starts to have a life on its own. So don't underestimate the importance of small steps. Get started. And as the saying goes in Dutch, geen woorden, maar daden. Not words, but deeds.
And I love what you said about defining your values. And that goes for individuals as well. If you're really losing direction in life, is what is important to you? And where is your, you know, because we act from our values always. And our values inform our identity in the world. So if you're stuck, stop and question where your values are coming from. I think that's very powerful. We don't think of that. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So what are the next steps for you? I mean, life seems really exciting. Where are you going in the next year with this?
So I want to obviously continue to roll out this framework that I write about. So I've set up my consultancy business in the UAE for that purpose as well, to help the companies that want to get started and get them along in practical ways, you know, help them get started. And the other thing I'm thinking about, they always say you never write just one book. So now that I'm more and more conscious about these kind of business models, I see more and more of them. And maybe I should make a little collection of how this Ubuntu framework, Ubuntu Polder framework, is already alive and well in many different companies, and that I kind of make a collection, interview the people, and again, give further inspiration to others that it can be done. And it's not, I've not called it a model, because if you say a model, it implies do 1 + 2 + 3 and get this result. Mm-hmm. I've called it a framework. It's basically get inspiration, see locally what's available, and then come up with your own solution. Yeah. But the principles are still applicable and the same.
Okay. So, Bruno, where can listeners get hold of you? And more importantly, where can they get hold of your book?
So if you Google Ubuntu in the UAE, you'll find my consultancy.
Okay.
For the book, it's available in Amazon and other online bookstores, and I'm now starting to also get it distributed in local bookstores. But yeah, it's a whole new world, writing a book and then publishing a book and then promoting the book and distributing the book. So it's step by step, but it's already available online and they ship it anywhere in the world. I've had some books shipped to Kinshasa in the DRC. It arrives. So in South Africa, for sure, it will arrive.
Brilliant, brilliant. Bruno, thank you for your time today. I'm going to put all of your contact details and links to where people can download your book or audio book on Amazon in the show notes. And I look forward to chatting with you in a couple of months' time to see, you know, what's happening with your next sort of big adventure, because this is extremely exciting and you're making a difference in the world, and that needs to be acknowledged. So thank you.
Thank you, Nikki, and congratulations on your podcast and having always great topics that are of interest to all of us. So you also keep it up. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.